Okay, say hi again.
Hi. No. Okay, I'm the president of Students for Genital Integrity. It's a new student group on campus here. The group was formed as a means to unite three groups of people who generally seem to work apart from each other, and that's people who are working against routine infant male circumcision, along with those who are working against female genital mutilation, and those who are working against sex reassignment surgery on intersex children. I find it very unfortunate that these three groups work so separately from each other, because it's really three sides to the same issue, namely the forced cutting of a child's genitals in order to conform to a particular society's concepts of aesthetics or normality. There are a lot of misconceptions and thoughts in regards to these issues, particularly in regards to infant male circumcision, because it's so routine within our own culture. I've put together some things as far as I'd like to address why the issue of infant male circumcision is a feminist issue and all the ways in which that it affects women. But I feel that in order for me to address that, first you need to understand why America circumcises and why it's not a good thing. Circumcision started in America. It started to be medicalized in America in the late 1800s. And around 1860, maybe 0.001% of Americans were circumcised. So 99.99 were not. However, this guy, Louis Serre, this doctor, decided he could be all rich and famous by pushing the idea that... Well, first you have to understand that... bacteria, viruses, and what caused diseases were not understood at the time. You know, things at the cellular level had not been discovered or understood yet. So the medical community came up with various ideas as to what caused disease and problems and pushed them. And as long as the medical community came to any form of consensus, or a couple of prominent physicians at the time came, you know, pushed an idea, well, then the public generally believed them. As well, you know, who else are you going to believe besides the medical community? And the fact is that most of the things that were practiced during the 1800s are looked back at today as, you know, not even being called medicine. Unfortunately, circumcision still persists. The late 1800s, there was this Victorian era going on, you know, because Queen Victoria in England and in had a major influences in America as well. You had very strong anti-sexual and particularly massively anti-masturbation hysteria going on during the time. Masturbation was seen as like the cause of dozens, if not hundreds, of diseases. Anything from, you know, blindness and insanity to death and paralysis and liver damage, and you name it, was somehow attributed to masturbation. I don't know if you've heard about this in any of your other classes, but John Harvey Kellogg, who founded the Kellogg's Corn Flakes, actually invented corn flakes as a nutrient supplement to stop people from masturbating. Exactly. The idea was that foods, like spicy foods or really flavorful foods, would excite your nervous system and therefore, you know, lead you to more sexual thoughts and masturbate and other non-procreative sexual activity.
Gratitude, so, right?
What? Yeah, as well as Graham crackers, who is Graham, I forget his first name, did that first. Sylvester Graham, yes. Sylvester Graham, and then later John Harvey Kellogg pushed the idea of eating only bland food so as not to excite the nervous system, and thus graham crackers and then cornflakes were invented. Well, in 1888, John Harvey Kellogg came out with this very well-received book at the time. Do you remember what it was called?
Sorry.
In any case, a very well-received book at the time. In it, it was just on general health. But 145 pages of the, like, 350 pages were on masturbation. Well, in there, he states that he was one of the first people to push the idea of circumcision as a means of punishment for masturbation, to be performed by a surgeon without anesthesia, so it would have this effect on the child's mind, especially when connected with the idea of punishment. So the child would know that this is done because he is masturbating, causes his pain, as well as getting rid of the mobile skin of his penis, which is generally an intact male or not circumcised male, will move the penile skin over, will move the penile skin rather than just slide their hand up and down the skin. They would keep their hand on the skin, move the skin itself over the glands, etc., in order to give themselves pleasure. So by removing that, you would remove more than 50% of the erogenous tissue of the man's penis, or the boy's penis, who will grow up to be a man, and remove that mobile skin, however, still leave the possibility for procreation, which is all that mattered at the time. Non-procreative sex was highly looked down upon. So the idea of reducing the sexual pleasure as much as possible while still allowing for procreation was the goal. So that's how it starts. It took just 5 years for another prominent physician to go from, no, forget this just punishment thing, we should universalize circumcision in infancy so that way they'll never grow up to masturbate. They'll never... Obviously that didn't work.
I was just about to ask.
it just made for more creative ways of masturbating. But that was the rationale with which it was pushed. I'm currently, I'm doing my master's degree in human sexuality at State, doing my thesis on infant male circumcision and its effects on male and female sexuality, which is going to bring us back into this and all the ways that it affects women's sexuality as well as women in general. The fact that we've normalized circumcision and the fact that we've normalized circumcision within our male population, which is roughly 50% of America's population, makes so that we've created all the problems that are associated with circumcision as just normal. So they're not problems, they're just, well, that's just how things are. And it's become so institutionalized and become so normal that no one even knows or thinks to attribute it to what we're doing to our baby boys right after they're born. So some of the problems with it, besides the very fact that it was instituted as a means of sexual control, all forms of genital cutting have been instituted specifically for the purpose of sexual control, whether it, boys here or boys and girls in parts of Africa and other places that institute genital cutting. Other major problems with it. It's intensely painful. Intensely painful. Infant male circumcision is like the rule that is used, is the standard that is used for measuring infant pain. A study was done on, not too long ago, a few years ago, on like certain topical anesthesias during circumcision, and they had a control group and which got no topical anesthesia, and a group that got this EMLA topical anesthesia. Well, they ended up stopping the experiment early because they ended up feeling that this is too cruel, we cannot continue. They were measuring cortisol levels and other measurements of trauma, and they were like, we cannot in good ethics. There you go, with good ethics continue the study, seeing how incredibly traumatic this is for our control group. However, it still continues, and the vast majority of the times, it's still done without any form of anesthesia. But even when a form of anesthesia is used, it's not enough. It may reduce the amount of pain the child is feeling during, but it certainly doesn't completely get rid of it. And beyond that, it doesn't. That's just during the operation. You're still living with the wound until it heals. So, every time a diaper is changed, every time you pee, you're getting this urine into this new raw open wound. Okay, so getting back to some of the ways that it affects women, I'm sure we'll end up going back and forth into the problems while we're doing this. But go for it, Ben.
A little bit about the surgery itself.
Sure. This will actually start us into a little bit of the problem with how it affects women. When a woman is pregnant, you know, she spends 9 months getting intensely close to this fetus inside of her, and intensely close to this baby. And when she gives birth, you know, it's a major event in her life. One of the her foremost instincts is to nurture and protect this child. But instead, generally speaking, if this child is born in America, first of all, 85% of the world does not circumcise their children. It's Jews, Muslims, and Americans who circumcise their children. South Koreans since the 60s, 70s, when America started to have its influence there. Parts of the Philippines, but they don't do it in infancy. They do it around 12 years old in general. And other than that, doesn't really exist. Europe has never done it. England did until 1952, and they stopped. Canada used to do it because of the influence of America and England, and their rates are now in the single digits. Australia also, their rates have plummeted. So America is really the last Western industrialized nation that's still holding on to it, and the only one to do it for non-religious reasons. All right, so you've built this closeness to your child, want to nurture and protect, and baby spends 9 months inside the womb in fetal position. It's born, held by the mother for a brief period of time until the doctors take it away, takes it into a separate room in the hospital, specifically the circumcision room, specifically soundproofed in order to keep the rest of the hospital from hearing the shrieks, because I can't even call them cries, the shrieks of the baby during the circumcision. Circumcisions are performed in a few different ways, some of which are worse than others, none of which are problem-free. So once in this room, the baby will be taken onto a circumstraint. Picture a plastic mold about this big, slightly larger than the baby, with a concave, mold of an approximate baby shape into it. The baby is then laid flat back, instead of being from the fetal position 9 months, laid flat back onto this board and strapped down across the arms, across the chest, and across each leg, spread-eagled. In order to keep the child from moving. A cloth is placed over this child's body. There are videos online. You can see anytime you want. They're not pleasant, though. A hole is placed in the cloth. The child's penis is thread through this cloth. It's wiped with an antiseptic to sterilize it, frequently giving the child his first out-of-the-womb erection. Then, when a child is born, just as a little girl is born with a hymen in order to protect her vagina from bacteria, etc., while she's growing up, little baby boys are born with their foreskin attached to their glands with this by synechia, the same thing that's holding your fingernail to your finger. In order to do a circumcision, the first thing they have to do is tear that apart. So they stick a probe between the foreskin and the glands, and pull it around, tearing the two apart from each other. I can tell you that once I learned about this, and once I learned everything about it, I've been able to, with light and good lighting, look at my genitals and look at my glands and see the little pits and scarring that are from it. I never noticed and never thought anything of it, it's just my glands, and now I see, oh, okay, there, oh, okay, there. So it's not, you know, it that alone leaves its effects on the penis. From there, one of the most common methods is the Gomco clamp, which picture a thumb screw from medieval times. Yeah, most of the devices, circumstraint and the Gomco clamp, do very much represent medieval torture devices. But anyway, so this picture a metal dome is placed over the glands in order to protect it from being accidentally sliced. Not that that doesn't happen here and there. And then the foreskin is pulled tightly up over this device and screwed down with a clamp, crushing the skin between the two, cutting off blood flow, and then a scalpel is taken around, cutting off the foreskin. That's more or less how a circumcision is done. Again, medically speaking, that is. Again, these differ depending on where they're done. Devices, religious ceremonies versus non-religious ceremonies, you know, places that perform FGM, parts of Africa, where they use various stones and glass or whatever, yeah, they're using the same types of things when they do their male genital cutting as well. So, flat back from fetal position, and one of the biggest things is that, you know, this patriarchal ritual, it overrides this mother's basic instinct to nurture and protect your child. Bringing in the religious aspect again, you know, I cannot table without anywhere, whether it's on campus or off campus, without you know, people coming up to me and discussing various Jewish or Islam issues regarding circumcision. But a number of times already, I've had Jewish woman come up to me and tell me that when she was pregnant, she prayed to have a girl so she wouldn't have to deal with this issue. Again, I mean, how does that help women? How does that help build a community? And I see it as intensely wrong, breaking that type of mother-infant bond. Okay, so that's one way to break the mother-infant bond. Second, when a baby is born, the mother's their world. You know, there's no separation between mother and the world. Anything that happens to the child is attributed to the mother, whether it's positive things or whether it's negative things. I mean, this, in the mind of the infant, is the ultimate betrayal on the part of its mother. You know, it will look around and its mother's not there, unless, of course, she is there, in which case, is it really any better for this child, in this case, in this feeling of fear and betrayal? When is feeling fear and betrayal? There have been studies that have shown that there is a definite disruption in breastfeeding post-circumcision, that because of the trauma and pain that the child has gone through, he's frequently not able to calm down enough in order to be able to breastfeed immediately or when is necessary, and that alone can end up causing a disruption in the breastfeeding bond, which can end up causing longer term effects. Alright. I brought a couple of books with me that had some interesting things going on in them. One is Circumcision, the Hidden Trauma, which we're going to... Yes? Go for it. Anytime. Yes,
that's the hospital.
Most of what I'm referring to is it's the medicalization of circumcision. However, all forms of circumcision carry most of the problems that are in line for us. I would love to talk to you sometime about your breast experiences.
The most common experience in this country is
that. Yeah. You know, I was circumcised in a breast at 8 days of life, which brings into another problem. Things have changed a bit depending on the circle and the sect of Judaism, etc. But, you know, I was born into a Reform Judaism household, which is, you know, the least strict, so to speak, of Judaism. And my mom wasn't allowed to attend, or she was taken away during the actual cutting part of the ritual. And my dad watched and he passed out. So again, you know, there's this intensely patriarchal aspect of circumcision. Okay. So the other book is Sex as Nature Intended It. Sex as Nature Intended It is one of the few books on circumcision, or books against circumcision anyway, that are written by women. One of the two authors, Kristen O'Hara and her husband Jeffrey O'Hara, published a study in the British Journal of Urology in 1999 on the survey that they conducted of American women who have had sexual experiences with both circumcised and intact men. Oh, you'll notice I use the term intact rather than the term uncircumcised. I have issues with the term uncircumcised because of the fact that using the un prefix normalizes the concept of circumcision. You would never say this, she's unmastectomized. however you say that word. you know, or anything along those lines. So the idea of normalizing surgical procedure just, you know, does not sit well with me. Anyway, so in 1999, she published this study on other studies that have been done on women's thoughts, etc., on circumcised and intact males have had major flaws in them in the fact that they generally do not correct for whether the women interviewed or surveyed have ever actually had an experience with an intact male or not. So this study consisted only of women who have had contact with sexual experiences with both intact and circumcised males. And what this survey found was that 6 out of 7 women said that they preferred sex with the intact male, that they were more likely to have orgasms, and those who had multiple orgasms had, well, there was higher degrees of multiple orgasms with an intact partner as well. And also, they were much less likely to describe sex as painful as they were when they were with a circumcised male. Which brings us to one of the major aspects as to how it affects women is the two major sexual dysfunctions that we blame on women are vaginal dryness and pain during intercourse. And without a doubt, if not solely caused by male circumcision, are majorly contributed to by the doctor-inflicted surgery of male circumcision. I have a... No, you can blame doctors for that. I have pictures in this book that show basically what goes on inside of a woman's vagina when she's having penetrative sex with an intact male.
Just do the hand motions, Greg. Explanation.
Actually, you can pass this around. you can pass this around while I don't know what hand motion she's talking about. Okay, here. You can pass this around first. Okay. Again, when boys are born, what an intact penis would look like is when it's flaccid. I'll explain first. You would have the foreskin, which is really just an extension of the penile skin system. You know, the penile skin would start at the base, it would go down, past the glands, in front of the glands, and then come back in behind itself here, behind the glands, and then connect back to the rest of the skin system, somewhere behind the glands. The outer portion is all just regular skin tissue, epithelial tissue, and the inner portion of the foreskin, as well as everything forward of that on the inside, is mucous membrane tissue, like your lips, like your vagina, like your inner labia, your clitoris, for example. However, all of this is highly, well, first of all, most of that is removed, you know, and what is left is highly abnormalized. It's not kept moist anymore. What is left is not an internal structure anymore. The glands is supposed to be an internal structure with the ability to be exposed for sexual situations, etc. Instead, it's constantly exposed. It's left to dry out. It doesn't have the warmth of being protected. And it doesn't have that general protection from the environment. So instead, whenever you're walking, when you're wearing diapers, growing up to underwear, clothes, etc., whenever you're walking, whenever you're moving, your glands is getting this. Constantly, all day, every day. So what that ends up doing is, in order to protect the nerves, your body wants to protect itself, so it builds up these layers of keratin, or essentially callus, over the glands. 7 to 15 extra layers of keratin over the mucous membrane tissue. So this highly desensitizes the tissue, so that way, you know, you wouldn't notice anymore while you're working and while you're getting this constant stimulation. But you're also not getting the positive stimulation when you do want it. Think about if you had your tongue out 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, not able to bring it back into your mouth. It would completely dry out. It would be at a cooler temperature than it should be. And now imagine taking a pair of jeans and rubbing it back and forth across it. all day.
And then imagine tasting something
after. Yeah, exactly. Imagine tasting something after that. You're not going to get the same sensation that you would have otherwise. And as you get older and older, it's only going to be less because you're building up more and more of this callus. So, by removing... Okay, so when a boy would get erect, this, instead of being extremely taut, like would happen with a circumcised male, the penile skin, the foreskin, whatever, which just takes up more of the slack, and you still have mobile skin. This mobile skin makes, like, hand genital contact easier, like, lubrication's not necessary at all, because again, it's not so much about moving your hand over the skin anymore. The idea is to stimulate by moving the skin itself. The moving of the skin, the stretching and not stretching of the skin is very pleasurable, as well as just the movement of the inner lining of the foreskin, mucous membrane, over the mucous membrane of the glands. Imagine kissing or any other genital contact, and you notice that mucous membrane to mucous membrane contact feels good. So instead, what you're left with is a very tight, taut skin system that more resembles like a dowel with a mushroom head. Now, by having this dowel with a mushroom head. That's the equipment that males get to be sexual with in this country. It completely abnormalizes sexual experience for everyone, boys and girls. I mean, most women in this country do not ever experience what natural sex is supposed to feel like. Instead, they get this abnormalized. The only people in the country who are not affected by this are lesbians who have never touched a male. which even many lesbians don't fall into that category. So during sex, during like penile vaginal penetrative sex, what ends up happening is that with an intact male, you would have penetration itself would be made easier because the glands or half the penis is moist instead of dry. It produces its own lubrication, and on top of that, the skin being able to move will ease penetration in of itself. Once you have penetration, picture it however you want, either the penis moving into the vagina or the vagina moving onto the penis, however you want to look at it. The penile skin will adhere to the walls of the vagina, and when there's like moving out, moving up, the penis moves within that sheath rather than the sheath itself moving. The inside of the vagina is more sensitive to pressure rather than touch changes. So by creating this friction, you're only causing friction, which can lead to dryness and pain rather than just these pressure changes. Also, when you're, as far as the whole dryness thing, when a circumcised male pulls out, again, you have this dowel with a mushroom head going on. Whenever he pulls out, the glands with the head being the way it is, you know, it collects and pulls the lubrication from the inside. Pulling it out, doing long thrusts generally, exposing it to the air where it starts to dry, comes back in just to collect more lubrication to pull back out, expose to the air, starts to dry out, come back in again. So this is the major reason why there many women have the issues with dryness is because the vagina is not designed to produce as much lubrication as we require from it for a circumcised sex. And again, the friction will increase chances of pain, etc., because you should not be having that type of friction on the vaginal walls. Another aspect of it is that intact boys and circumcised boys fuck differently. Circumcised boys will generally do very long thrusts. Because the reason why they fuck differently is because they are working with different equipment. When people are being sexual with each other, they're generally moving or in a way that it gives them the most pleasure. And, you know, and the idea is that that would give the most pleasure to your partner as well. However, because circumcised boys are not working with the equipment that they're supposed to be working with, what's giving them the most pleasure is not necessarily what would give their partner the most pleasure. They would give very long thrusts, and then come back in. Long thrusts, come back in. Intact boys will generally stay very deep in and have more shallow thrusts. So the major way that this is going to cause a difference is that by keeping this close contact, their pelvis is making contact with the female's clitoral mound much more frequently, as well as the general feeling of closeness that you would have during sex that you don't have as much when you're making these long, separated thrusts. So by having this staying in close and more frequent contact with the woman's clitoral mound, she's more likely to get the type of stimulation that she needs for her orgasms, as well as her general pleasure as well. Yes? No?
I'm totally amazed at what I'm hearing right now. Like, it is
blowing
my mind, and you just saved my unborn son's life.
I have still got a question.
Go for it.
Now, as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, did the founders of this practice, in a way, sort of, you know, Victorian era, did they know or have in mind that, hey, this is just going to make sex sort of unpleasurable for everyone, which is kind of like, you know, like for Victorian era, it was like
sure. I mean, it wasn't just boys that were sex was, or sexual pleasure was looked down upon. John Harvey Kellogg, when he was pushing cutting off boys' foreskin to abnormalize their sex organ, he pushed for parents of little girls who wouldn't stop masturbating to put a drop of pure carbolic acid on their clitoris in order to stop the abnormal sexual excitement. Absolutely. Some form of female genital cutting or clitorectomies were paid for by American medical insurance companies through the 70s. In the 1970s, 3,000 clitorectomies were done each year on average during the 1970s. I mean, males today, in America, it's over 3,000 a day. But, you know, the fact that we look so high, so far down upon various forms of female genital cutting, we really need to recognize the fact that, yeah, up until about 25 years ago, yeah, they were happening with not rare occurrence in America. So, yes?
How would this have to do with, rape rates and sexual rates?
This is something I actually wanted you to talk about. That brings us into bits and pieces. Like, this issue is very, very, very far-reaching. I mean, again, it's kind of hard to think that it wouldn't be when you're doing this to the majority of your male population, which is half the population of your country, and the population which is supposedly has the most power in the country. So by putting them through a highly painful, highly traumatic experience right after they're born, yeah, it's going to have very far-reaching effects. Very far-reaching effects, which are, generally speaking, completely ignored because we live in a circumcising population. It's very, criticizing FGM is easy. Why? Because we don't do it. And criticizing other cultures has been around forever, and it's always been very easy to do. But to look within your own borders and see what's normal within your culture and being like, maybe this isn't right, that is a lot more difficult to do. This book, Circumcision and the Hidden Trauma, Ben's favorite anti-circumcision book, and there are a lot. I own 12 of them, and there are more that I don't have yet. Treats circumcision as a traumatic event. You treat it as a likely occurrence of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, in the majority of our male population. But again, because when you institute something like PTSD in the majority of your male population, it's not PTSD anymore. At least it's not recognized as such. It's just, oh, that's how men are. So, the idea that rape rates in America are that of war-torn countries. they're 10, 50, 100 times higher than most of Europe. Now, that's not, oh, we're the highest. No, that's like, we are way higher than the rest of the industrialized world. Way higher. Why? Now, is it just circumcision? No, probably there's a C, you know, with circumcision being A and rape rates being B. There's probably a C that's partially to blame for A and B, you know, which is basically America's whole concepts of sexuality. One of the major reasons why this continues, even though tonsillectomy, which was, you know, universalized at one time, and adenoidectomy another time, while those have been stopped and this continues, because, well, this has to do with sex and our sex organs, and we just don't talk about that. So we continue. I jump all over the place, and I'm very sorry for that. But the fact is, our rape rates, as well as our violence and murder rates, are ridiculously high and way higher than any non-war-torn country. And yeah, I think that the fact that short hours or possibly days after most of our boys are born, we are putting them through a highly traumatic event. We're committing violence on their genitals, and, you know, circumcision, where sex and violence meet. Yeah, would likely be a cause of this. You know, this imprinting. There's going to be neurological changes due to circumcision. You'll find that circumcised boys have a lower pain threshold than intact boys or girls do. A number of the studies that we have based on gender in America, yeah, I think they're completely moot. There's no validity in them because they're based on a circumcising population, or at least they can't be universalized. Things such as the fact that, like, supposedly boys have... Women have a better sense of smell and hearing than boys do. There have been a few studies in America that have shown this. Studies in Europe that have tried to show the same thing don't show that. My idea is that, well, the major difference between us and Europe is the fact that, well, our boys, we circumcise right after they're born. That's one of the reasons why this indication that there's neurological changes due to this event. And most likely having to do with the fact that right after you're born, you commit this violence. There's going to be a rewiring of the brain in order to prepare this child for a violent world. Studies that show that boys and girls doing their, like, 3-month immunization shots, circumcised boys react much stronger, cry much more, and much longer than intact or females do. Another sign of post-traumatic stress disorder is that there's this association with the earlier event, and probably fear that comes along with that. So there is, without a doubt, there's long-term psychological effects from circumcision, whether they're remembered or not, that are going to have an effect on the population, how it affects individuals, and definitely how it affects the society itself. Yes, Ben.
I was just going to add that one of the really unfortunate rationales that kind of facilitated the surgery for Boston Scott in the U.S. is the rationale that infants mysteriously, amazingly, do not really feel pain. And unfortunately, some of the greatest psychiatric studies and just general breakthroughs in psychology of the last 50 years have demonstrated that particularly events around birth are of the utmost importance to, like, the potential shaping of this basic psychological understanding of the world that a person carries through the rest of their life. The closer to birth, in fact, there's, like, this direct ratio. The closer to birth you get, the more vital it is to absolutely protect a baby. So this rationale that was feeding this surgery turns out to be exactly the opposite.
And this is the first contact the baby's had with its genitals, the first experience
exactly
they're having with their genitals.
The most formative. I mean, my basic theory is that you come into the world and you're basic level of consciousness experiencing things is so heightened. This is the first time, right? These are your formative experiences. So what are we talking about when we're talking about the very first day of life, subjecting a human being to that kind of experience? And, you know, needs to be examined.
I have a question.
Go for it.
Like, the rationale around, like, I've heard a lot about circumcising is it's, like, a cleanliness thing. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, first of all, one thing that needs to be understood in regards to that is the fact that the concept of it being cleaner came after we instituted it, not before. So it's not the reason why we started it. It's, we have that reason because we do it. You know, you'll find that if you look at the arguments for that are given for FGM in cultures that perform, that they're virtually identical to the arguments that we give within our own culture. It's cleaner, it looks better, whatever else is given. They're all, you know, they're the exact, they're cultural, you know, it has to do with the culture. It has nothing to do with actual fact or how it affects.
There's a misconception too that in the context of Judaism, that was ever a rationale. That was never a rationale. The idea of hygiene as a reason to circumcise is considered ridiculous in like any, you know, any scholarly Jewish context. They say it straight out. Listen, this has nothing to do with hygiene. That might be something that someone would bring up as like a pleasant aside, but it, you know, that's
almost
that reason has always come out.
Almost everything that you hear about why you should circumcise comes from circumcised men. You know, just as the people who perpetuate FGM the most in cultures that do that are the women themselves, because you don't want to think that you have been permanently damaged, particularly in your genitals.
By your hair.
Yeah.
And you don't want to think that you've done, you know, that you could have done something like that to your child. So rather than that, no. I am reaffirming the fact that that what was done to me was not only not a bad thing, but was a good thing, because I'm going to do it to my child. You know? So, and I would never do anything bad to my child. So if I do it to my child, it must need to be done. It must be a good thing. So therefore, I'm okay. I'm fine.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was this article that I posted to Students for Genital Integrity email list that from allafrica.com. So women on rampage over FGM case at magistrate court. Thousands of women yesterday went on rampage at the Brikama Magistrates Court protesting against the arraignment of seven women who are alleged to have forcefully circumcised one girl by mutilating her genitalia in this place. I can't pronounce half the names and places of this, but at the court premises, these were scores of women shouting pro-female circumcision slogans. Female circumcision is our culture, President Jama cannot stop it, and no one can prosecute anyone for circumcising their daughters. Blah, 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 blah. So, one of the other major aspects of why I think this is a major feminist issue is the fact that you cannot understand that without understanding what goes on in our own country and our own culture. You cannot understand how, you know, these women can so adamantly claim the right to continue this practice without understanding that's exactly what's been going on here for 100 years. And beyond that, you know, a lot of cultures look at us as complete hypocrites in the fact that, you know, go to Norway, for example, and they don't see a real difference between cutting your boy's genitals or cutting your girl's genitals. You know, it's genital mutilation, which, however you slice it, you know, it's ridiculous. It's just we have a certain cultural relativism that says, no, this is okay. Now, again, I never compare the two in this severity. I'll never say that, oh, well, male circumcision is just as bad or blah, 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 blah as FGM. Well, the fact of the matter is that, you know, genital cuttings of boys and girls vary considerably from place to place, and a lot of things that we call circumcision or female circumcision, you know, are very different from each other. Even within our own culture can change a fair amount. Once you go outside of our culture, it changes even more so. But beyond that, the major thing is it's absolutely ridiculous to say, well, FGM is worse, so there's nothing wrong with what we do. No. The fact of the matter is they're both wrong. They're both major human rights violations, and they both need to stop. Okay. So anyway, that's the basic thing. If a peaceful cooperative society is ever going to happen, it needs to start with our children. And by bringing our boys or any children into the world with violence is not going to help make that happen. So that's the end. You guys open the floor to questions.
Do you have any intact friends?
He's very taken. But he wants to make a documentary. He's a very good filmmaker. The reason he wants to make a documentary is this issue really affected him growing up. He had to basically come out every girlfriend he ever had. And this was something he dreaded. As in, I have foreskin. I'm a freak. I'm sorry. You know, I hope you'll still be with me. Which is further testament to how this issue is just like so pervasive.
Yeah.
Whether you're cut, whether you're a woman, whether you're intact, if you're in America, there is this cloud of circumcised culture that lingers over everything.
Oh, I'm sorry. It reminded me of the other aspect, which is something you can help me with.
Sure.
Boys and girls' genitals are a lot more alike than most people think of them as. And they would be far more alike, except for the way that we have normalized our males' genitals. All the major ways that circumcision affects men's genitals are the ways that it would quote unquote would defeminize the male's genitals. The fact that that creates lubrication and the moistness in the genitals, the natural scents of the male's genitals, which are generally removed from this. You generally do this better than I do.
I can see what you're talking about. Okay, so there's a massive stigma in this country about the uncircumcised boy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a really bizarre psychology, and I think ultimately really undermines female sexuality. One thing, by breaking this analogy, you're talking about, okay, a girl, her first experience with a boy, with a penis, is that, okay, this penis is dry, for one thing. I'm lubricated. This is really bizarre. Maybe not, that's bizarre, because maybe that's what you were expecting, but certainly it might lead you to reinforce some ideas you had going in that your genitalia are just more complex and weird and, you know, maybe dirty. Smell. Okay. Women in this country get a lot of unfair, kind of bizarre, like, whatever, psychological baggage about the fact that their genitalia actually have a smell. Well, that's funny because the normal male genitalia have a very similar smell. Why? Because there's actually skin, and there's actually the skin, layers of skin where fluid, and particularly during like foreplay, you know, the penis is releasing these fluids that make it more pleasurable, and it stays in there. And you know, there's a smell. It could be subtle. It can be pronounced. You know, it can be an indication that this person might not be that clean. Certainly. But there's a smell. It's the smell of sex. I love that smell. I'm serious. Greg and I restore. This is the other side of this issue, is that you can actually, depending on how severely you're circumcised, you can, through through gradual stretching, I've had it doing it for about a year and a half, you can regrow that skin. You know, it's a really amazing process, and it's like been one of the saving graces to this whole issue, and I come to take pride in this. And I come to take pride in the fact that I have more mobile skin, et cetera, et cetera. But so really, when you're talking about breaking this analogy, it's so complex. It's not just that the man's pleasure is reduced. I get the feeling that women internalize these differences as, like, you know, and which further alienates themselves from their own sex. As in, I have these smells, I have these fluids, this guy doesn't, you know what I mean? And so, which further stigmatizes the intact man.
Which shows, like, dominated difference, you know? Like, ooh, I'm gross, dirty, girl, feminine, nastiness, versus he's, like, clean, pure, unsmelly, you know?
It's sort of putting up more of a gender issue.
I just remember being in high school and listening to all the guys talk about, like, the girls that were, like, the smellier girls.
Yeah, the girls that
maintain their stuff much more.
Yeah, or do you remember people talking? I remember my brothers being like, hey, dude, so-and-so down the street isn't circumcised. Isn't that gross? Isn't that weird?
Yeah,
he has to, like, pull his stuff back and he takes a leak and just weird stuff like that. And it's not really a big deal. Like, I mean, I remember girls, but I remember girls being like, oh, have you ever been with someone who's uncut? And if you're like, yeah, they're like, oh, was that really gross and weird? And it's just like,
it's the same.
I would like to think that uncut men were gross and that a size penis was sexier. And then after talking to Grant, I was like,
no way.
The one I've been with that are uncut.
Intact. I'm not circumcised.
His natural is always weight better.
One thing I also want to say, which is fortunately goes deeper than that, which is serous glands, it's moist and protected, like the clitoris. And like the clitoris, it wants to be handled in a more sensitive way, in a circumcised way. So, you're talking about boys that go their whole lives masturbating in a totally different way than they would if they were intact. This is something I've talked with my intact friends about. They, you know, this culture of pornography we live in, which is all circumcised, by the way. They say, my God, if I ever handled my genitalia that way, it would feel like a fucking car wreck. And the natural penis wants to be handled in a very similar way. Especially the gland, the relationship between the glands, which is the head of the penis, and the skin around it, the foreskin. Is so analogous to the way the foreskin likes to be handled, which is a lot of delicate interplay between the skin and the actual clitoris itself, and, you know, very, definitely not. It's really sad, though. The thing you have to keep in mind is that a circumcised lover is fucking that way. Because that's the way they know how. And like Greg said, people want to maximize their pleasure. So that's, I consider it a really, you know, I don't go, God, these guys are fucking clueless, you know. I think it's just unfortunate that that's what they've been predisposed to, right?
Yeah, that's kind of important. Don't be mean to cut boys now. Show compassion. First of all, the vast majority of them, just like me a couple years ago, don't know anything, at least at a conscious level.
Yeah.
And it's not their fault. You know, it's not that they are the way that doctors made them. So, I mean, the medical community itself, I mean, that's a complicated thing itself, because even today, if you look through more than half of medical textbooks, like, all their pictures of penises are circumcised penises, as though that's the way we're born. You know, if there's a mention of a foreskin, it's how to get rid of it, how to cut it out, you know, and they don't learn anything about the foreskin, and you know, like, my cousin's a doctor. This is one of the ways that I knew that, you know, I'm right on this. My cousin, My cousin's 42-year-old Jewish doctor who circumcised himself and has, without a doubt, circumcised many others. He is circumcised himself. He's got through like all the criteria for having like the hardest time or wanting to grasp this issue, whatever. And yet, you know, and he, we started our conversations with him being very pro. He's not anymore. So I showed him the work. I showed him the stuff from, like, you know, other medical associations have less than positive things to say about circumcision. And even America's, we don't have anything, like, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Medical Association, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, they will all just agree that it's not medically necessary, but they won't say anything negative. But, you know, you won't, like, in a month and a half ago in Saskatchewan, Canada, a little boy died due to complications from his circumcision, which I have to say is a lot less rare than you think it is. But this got media attention, et cetera, and it's caused a big hoopla up there, and their rates were like 25% approximately, which they're like all upset that their rates are so high, because for Canada, 25% is really high still. And, you know, the Saskatchewan Medical, whatever it's called, Association, sent out a letter to all their physicians saying, we discourage you from performing circumcisions. They're contraindicated, meaning now they're not just a neutral thing, it's not a good thing. It's negative consequences. The risks outweigh any potential benefits, which have never been proved to exist.
Recently, I've been investigating my family and various things related to this issue. And, recently, I learned that my dad, nearly bled to death, just hemorrhaged, and which is very common. Hemorrhaging is, you know, very common, but he was premature and very small. Like. So that's one thing that really, doesn't get. It's really hard to pinpoint, like, the rate of complications, you know, the rates. And there's a lot of speculation within our movement that they're much, much higher than any medical record would foreclose because, you know, they don't want.
Well, one of the things is that generally the complication is, or in particular the deaths associated with it, aren't listed as circumcision. It's listed as, like, from infection or something like that, rather than from, well, yeah, but this infection wouldn't have happened if it wasn't from the circumcision, etc.
So what did you say the rate was that here?
Yeah, I actually didn't say it yet, but when we were born, approximately late 70s, early 80s, it reached its peak in America. It would top 90%. Since then, largely because of, you know, our movement, it has dropped, as well as due to immigration. Immigration has definitely affected it, because it's an American thing, so immigrants, first generation, don't always do it, except for, by second generation, they frequently do, as a means of assimilating and becoming American. But now it's generally around 57% nationwide. Which is considerably lower, but, you know, it's still a majority, and it's very regional.
38% in the Western.
Yeah, the Western states, it's 38%.
So if you ever hear anybody say, oh, but I want to avoid the normal.
Yeah.
California.
Parts of the Midwest and certain other places, it's still around 90%. So it really differs quite a bit depending on where you are.
The Bible Belt.
Sorry.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But you know the interesting Christianity. You know, one of the main innovations of Christianity as a monotheistic religion. One of the biggest things. Paul has a lot of blog posts with Paul. If you're a Christian, don't circumcise. It's a bad thing. It's ridiculous. You know,
Acts 15 and Galatians 5, for any of you Bible people, Acts 15 more or less says It doesn't matter, only Christ will save you. Other than that, it doesn't matter. Galatians 5 is a lot more adamantly anti, and says if you allow yourself to be circumcised or circumcise your son, then you will be cut off from Christ. Christ is of no use to you. And then later on in the same passage, it says, "I wish that those who instigate these problems regarding circumcision, who like say that the Gentiles must be circumcised, would go all the way and castrate themselves." So it's very anti. Yet you'll find a number of Christians in America who think that think that they have to do it because of their religion. But you'll find like Catholics, there's never been a Pope who's been circumcised ever. And probably never will be.
Yeah, because that's how they recommend the Jews and not the Germans.
Yeah.
For
example?
I don't know. I don't know. What's the official title of your...
I'm sorry, Students for Genital Integrity?
My notebook.
So it affects our women a lot more than most people realize. That's the basic crux of it. And for those of you who sign up to the email list, please use it however you feel you'd like to. Be as active on it as you want. Just read if you want to, post things, ask questions, however you want to use it, go for it.
I would really like to say how much I appreciate the Women's Center.
The
fact that you helped Greg so much, which is fun for me, but I did okay. Greg, thank you, Greg.
Thank you. Thank you.
What? Anyone else want to go on the floor?
And also, if anyone knows a lot about FGM issues or wants to know more about them and wants to like spearhead events or things regarding it, please and definitely join, because I need more people who that will be their thing, because I really want this to be an umbrella group, but at the same time, I'm not lessening my efforts towards the male stuff that I'm working on. Plus, personally, I feel less comfortable with trying to change another culture than I do with working with the ones that I am affiliated with. So I want people to do things. I want people to be involved and bring the group how they want it to be. But
particularly when we table, it'd be really wonderful if we had some people that were really knowledgeable at FGM.
The American medical community is performing on certain parts of Africa on experimenting to see if circumcision will lower HIV rates, which in my mind, my guess is going to majorly increase them. We're introducing male circumcision to cultures that don't circumcise, which is dangerous in part also in the fact that FGM does not exist anywhere in the world that doesn't do MGM, but MGM exists in lots of places where FGM doesn't exist. So FGM is somehow dependent on the formation.
So whenever there's male circumcision,
there's female.
No, wherever
there's female, there's male.
Male is 7 to 8 times more common worldwide. So FGM is somehow dependent on their first being MGM. Mm-hmm. So by instituting MGM to cultures could ultimately end up leading to more FGM potentially. But we're testing this on them due to some flawed, fucked up studies that have been done. I think it's going to cause more problems than the fact that you have this population that doesn't generally do the latex thing as it is.
Yeah.
So now you're telling them, this is going to reduce your chance. Oh, well, if I had half my dick cut off, why use a condom also? So I'm protected. I've been circumcised.
So for that reason, I think it's going to majorly increase, as well as the fact that increased friction.
And that's what they want in Africa anyway, kill all the black people.
Have you heard anything about this? I heard somewhere that, like, you know, HPV, human papillomavirus, where I heard that there's like a thing saying, I don't know, some of the circumcised guys intact have a higher rate of having that or whatever.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Okay. In April. Okay, first of all, you have to understand that our anti-circumcision movement, we're fighting a battle, not for circumcision things. There are people who really want this to continue. What's pushing them? What are they trying to get out of it? I don't know, but I really think that there needs to be studies on circumcisers to see what's
the problem. You know what's going on? If they don't want to have the realization that something's been altered.
Not to mention, like, the main advocates of the surgery just happen to be, like, urologists. Men have done a lot of circumcisions in their lives.
There's
billions of dollars. Billions of dollars in the circumcision industry. We can go into that at some point, but it's ridiculous. Not just what from the circumcision itself, but then the foreskins are sold to
the foreskins are sold.
Foreskins are sold to skin Metaskin companies as well as
the Holy Grail, it's the most elastic. I don't really think you mentioned the fact that the foreskin is actually has the highest density of nerve endings.
Yes,
in the entire nerve endings. Yeah.
More than the glands.
It is the most elastic, potentially rejuvenative tissue in the entire male body. I mean, it's parts of the female body that are at the same level. So it seems to be this miraculous, like, holy grail for these products that are really expensive. So they're like, they cut them off.
Cosmetic companies that don't test on animals, that's what they're doing testing on. They've got the sensitive human tissue that they can test on. And then this new fucking, oh my god, a couple months ago, or not even, this new rejuvenating cream was developed using infant male foreskins, and being like sold on CBS, you know, praising it.
Now it's just anti-aging.
I can just feel the wrinkles fading away.
I can feel the little baby.
Oh my god, poor screen.